trial scheduled November 12th in Memphis, Arthur J. Haynes Jr. said today, quote, so far as I know, we going well. Ms. A. Haynes, considering his father, the J. Haynes, first defense, that quote, had an earlier reported that senior Samuel Jr.
Jail cell. Haynes Sr. was in court on another matter, but his son,
when asked about the report, said, quote, some things are read in the statements that are quite often only in the eyes of the beholder. I know of no plans to ask for a continuance, end quote. The younger Haynes did confirm that Ray had complained about conditions in his cell, and he said it was possible that a written motion may be filed next week asking for relief. Defense lawyers are due back in Memphis Wednesday to inspect items of physical evidence accumulated by the state for use in the prosecution. The defense won access to the state's evidence in a hearing last week in Judge W. Preston Battle's court. In the earlier report, Haynes Sr. was quoted as saying that Ray has undergone, quote, enough to bug anybody, end quote, during his confinement. He said Ray has had two guards, quote, breathing down his neck 24 hours a day, end quote, and sometimes has to cover his eyes against the bright lights, quote, shining on him night and day, end quote, in order to sleep. Haynes charged that the security setup surrounding Ray constitutes, quote, cruel and inhuman treatment. That's the end of the article.
J. Haynes,
it's an unfair position, Your Honor. He would
case in Maine, we're coming in here to trying to defend himself and prove the negative. Your Honor, further, we'd like to respectfully object to the very form of these proceedings. Of course, Your Honor has the undisputed right to seek assistance and counsel in this matter, and but this, we've had no opportunity to meet with this committee of lawyers. We made every conscientious effort to follow Your Honor's order, and I believe the spirit of this cooperation is reflected in these very articles attached here to this exhibit. But, of course, Your Honor knows that any Southern lawyer is going to have varying views, divergent views. It's inevitable on any given point. Now, of course, all of these free trial and free press matters have been the subject of a good many reports and a good many cases. One of them, of course, is the American Bar Association's Reardon Report. I'd like to quote to you, Your Honor, from Alfred Friendly and Ronald Goldfarb in their book, Crime and Publicity, in relation to the American Bar Association Reardon Report. And I would like to point out, Your Honor, that I don't know, and I don't intend to impugn or cast aspersions on the motives of any person, but I would like to read to you the type of situation, the danger that's being pointed out. States, quote, in general, there is cause for worry about the report's proposals. This is speaking to the report, Your Honor, about the report's proposals for punishing offenders of the non-disclosure provision. Not only in civil rights situations, but elsewhere, the temptation runs high to harass, silence, and even take revenge against the man who offends the establishment. Court police complex in most jurisdictions is more often than not, and understandably, self-protective. It is usually highly political, and its disinterest, in fact, falls far short of its theoretical ideal. It is hard to picture such local court cracking down on a prosecutor or police chief for talking out of school. It is easy to picture the vengeful prosecution of an unpopular counsel defending an unpopular client in an unpopular cause. Now, Your Honor, our bounden duty as lawyers to our client demands that so long as we represent him to the limit of our capacity. And this will be done. And it should be possible to do so, Your Honor, on the basis of our conscientious effort to follow the court's order, to abide by it. But to put on the defense attorneys in this case the burden of trying to predict or read the minds of Southern lawyers not involved in this case is an unreasonable burden. It's something that no attorney should be required to do. And for those reasons and on those grounds, without entering into discussion of the merits of these allegations, Your Honor, we move to dismiss.
Motion to dismiss.
You intend to file any pleading to this? Is your father?
No, Your Honor.
File any affidavit or anything as to what the facts are?
Your Honor, we hadn't. If matters as going to the merits of this motion require such affidavit, I will take my seat now and handwrite, Your Honor, one. We're unaware that any were required in this type of proceeding.
Well, I think this is a very informal proceeding, and I think it follows, I think this is a criminal proceeding, I think it follows the rule, the modes of chancery, and I think, you know, that we ought to, here and now, beat out some issues here, deep side. Court is concerned about its orders, violations, and this is not something that the court takes lightly, and I think this is our
prima facie was for these defendants to come in and show cause why they shouldn't be held in contempt of court. Now, the very newspaper articles, it's true. And that's proof as to what the people that were quoted in there told them. If that's denied. But I don't think it should be denied lightly because, I mean, this is not just a mere usual pleading. This is a matter of some people that ostensibly are in contempt of court. The court wants to know exactly what your position is about it. I mean, I don't want any... I think this committee, if they put to the proof, well, we're going to have to get the proof if it's necessary. But, yeah, you've got two articles over reporters' names as to... story that they acquired from a lawyer in this case over whom the court certainly has jurisdiction as far as this case is concerned about his statements. A lawyer who has shown a great proneness for making press statements at all times. Now, he remains within the four corners of the court's order. If they're not prejudicial against a fair trial, why, there's nothing the court can do about that, but he... conferences, and he seems to speak. I mean, he doesn't have any written statements. He speaks off the cuff. That's fine if he doesn't violate the orders of the court. But I want to know exactly what his position is about these articles. In other words, if he's denying, interviews in Birmingham in which the substance of these statements were not given to the media, why then I want to know about it.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. I'm going to say this first. Of course, defense, my client, and I both agree with you, Judge's order, and have in fact stood here and argued before you, Your Honor, the very point, the great danger of pretrial. And I think that the fact that Mr. Eames is sometimes in the presence of reporters cannot be avoided because, as you can well imagine, they flock around. And I believe that any member of the press corps would have to tell Your Honor that he is assiduously avoiding any mention of the merits of this case, the defense of this case, or any matter which could go to a fair trial. Now, Your Honor, if I may, I think perhaps the most appropriate procedure would be to go down these exhibits. That would be what Your Honor would prefer.
Your Honor, please, I have no objection to doing this any way that Mr. Haynes wants. But ultimately, we're going to come to this point, and I want to advise him now, that if it is his position, that Mr. Hamilton and Mr. Edmondson have misquoted him and he did not say those things, I want that in the record, not by way of argument, but by verified statement, either by sworn affidavit or by the much easier method of letting the respondent take the stand and be sworn to Hamilton.
Thank you, entitled one or two. Your Honor, if this is a criminal proceeding, I think that this is an unusual matter. I ask the court of education. Is the burden of proof on the defendant in this criminal proceeding?
The burden of proof is on the petitioners in this case, but the petitioners have a right to make up an issue here, and they have